Files number 1318-412-CV, Edinburgh Consolidated Independent School District, and Mike, is it Morath, Commissioner of Education for the State of Texas versus Christina L. Esparza. May I begin then with Mr. Campbell?
And actually, Ms. Butcher is going to lead us off.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ms. Butcher.
Let me clarify. You're representing the commission, correct?
I represent the Commissioner of Education, Mike Morath. That's correct, Your Honor.
Just want to make sure.
I want to make sure my things are secure here.
Okay.
So we don't have an incident while I'm addressing the court. I'm ready. May it please the court. This appeal addresses who makes the good cause determinations in teacher contract decisions. The legislature decided this issue in 2011 when it amended the education code to ensure that school boards were the ultimate decision makers in good cause determinations. And when it did so, it specifically was trying to ensure that those good cause determinations were not made by hearing examiners boxing in school boards through findings of fact that were difficult to overturn. The district court in this case erroneously allowed the hearing examiner to do just that. Good cause is a school board determination. In the 2011 amendments, the legislature introduced a new clause, determinations regarding good cause, to specifically allow school boards the latitude to make an ultimate determination about what constitutes good cause to terminate a contract.
But those determinations still have to be supported by substantial evidence.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
They must be. They are conclusions of law, but they are erroneous if they are not supported by evidence in the record. Mm-hmm. What the hearing examiners cannot do is the hearing examiners cannot make findings of fact. A good cause was historically a finding of fact. Mm-hmm. It was only a conclusion of law when everyone agreed and there was no dispute. The problem was, as the bill sponsor, the amendment sponsor, was discussing in his testimony in explanation for the amendments, is that school boards were really being hamstrung by hearing examiners who are taking on a case, and their job is to find the evidence and to issue findings of fact and to make a recommendation that does not bind the school board. But they're setting the gritty parts of the evidence, the hard facts is what the commissioner called them, in construing determinations regarding good cause.
But counsel, don't you think we'd be creating bad precedent if we allow the conduct of third parties to create good cause to terminate a contract?
The commissioner addressed that in his decision, and whether or not a third party has engaged in conduct that ultimately results in a good cause finding, it's not about fault. It's not about who did what. The commissioner gave a good example of a car accident, for example.
Yeah, I read it. So you agree with that analogy that if the person is a victim of an accident, inattentive driver, and results in blindness or loss of hearing, that would be a good cause to terminate a contract. Do you agree with that analysis?
It depends on the circumstances, but yes, Your Honor, I agree that what we're looking at is not necessarily the fault of the person whose contract is terminated. It can be. It can be a violation of school policy, but it can also be that circumstances have arisen that where the relationship, the employer-employee relationship, is no longer tenable. The legislature did not define good cause. The legislature has left that up to the school boards. And so it does not have to be. In this case, Mrs. Sparza was found by the hearing examiner to have been the victim of a crime. But it's not her fault that really is an issue. It's the consequences of the release of this nude selfie into the population, the general population, and its broad publication, and her status as the head of a campus over adolescent students, the community response to that, and the reaction, and the disruption to the school district, which were unfortunate events, but that's where the school board comes in and can determine whether or not the continuing existence of an employer and employee relationship, which is also good cause, as it's been defined in the case law.
So, for example, if, let's say, the nude picture was taken without the person's consent. Let's say, you know, her husband had taken the picture and somehow it had been made public. So even in that scenario, you're saying if a nude picture had been made public without any action of the employee, that would be, and it had caused an uproar in the community, that would be sufficient good cause under your analysis?
It could be. It would be up to the board ultimately to determine that. But what the issue is here is that in your scenario, Your Honor, it is something that really the person at issue did nothing. They are the victim of a crime. And the question
is she a victim of a crime? Because the hearings officer found she was a victim of a crime, and I believe that's undisputed in your response or in everybody's, all the responses.
That's correct, Your Honor. But what the other part of that equation, what the school board was looking at, is in the best interest of the students who it oversaw. And so when you have disruption, for whatever reason, whatever started, and Mrs. Sparza would certainly have a cause of action against the person who took her image. And the person in your scenario would certainly, I mean, if you have a peeping Tom or someone without consent took a picture, I mean, I think there are numerous scenarios where you could have a person who didn't do anything wrong but has now become compromised because there is a community response and a reaction that's a reality.
And that's where I think where the rubber hits the road in this case is, what is the substantial evidence that supports her inability to be an effective administrator? And you cite in your brief the Pope v. Perrin Witt Consolidated Independent School District, where this is a case where a teacher was in an inappropriate romantic relationship with students, but in addition to that allegation, they focused on the need that they had to show knowledge that this allegation of these inappropriate relationships did impair her effectiveness as a teacher. And in that case, the court says, or the commissioner says, the findings support that knowledge of the allegations impaired her effectiveness. Where is that in this case? Where is the evidence that supports that the knowledge, this disruption that you say, the community uproar, whatever, what is the evidence that showed she would be ineffective? Because they have no evidence that she was ineffective in that short time, because it was during the summer. I don't think, you know, much was going on at the schools. So the proof has to be that she was going to be ineffective in the fall when school began. What is the evidence that supports that?
Your Honor, the evidence, first I want to make a distinction between the status of a teacher and the status of a principal, because she is overseeing the entire campus. She's the face person for all of the parents, for the teacher. She's overseeing, and in case of the disciplinary head. The evidence, of course, Mrs. Sparza was put on administrative leave shortly after the selfie began really circulating. But the disruption to the campus, I mean, she could go and perform her duties, administrative duties, but she also had a higher function as the campus head. And that is, she's an example to the school. She's exemplary. She's a role model to these students. And she's overseeing the entire campus. In the record, there is evidence that there was significant disapproval and community discontent. Like, for example, Mr. Oscar Salinas, the board president, had spoken to people who were expressing a majority of lost respect for Mrs. Sparza. And whether or not the board had to recognize that there was sentiment, there was a police report, there was distraction, parents complaining to the press and afraid to speak out and give their names out of fear of a backlash. But a parent who would not cooperate, for example, when the campus police tried to find out where the selfie had come from, there was the risk that and the board members could certainly take their own experiences of having been, adolescents and they're overseeing adolescents in a school district to understand the impact of having an image, a naked image of the principal overseeing the school floating around the school district, and particularly the campus, every time a student is sent to the principal's office or every time there's...
Are you saying that we don't have to wait for a period of time to gather facts in order to present that the administrator or educator was ineffective because of the act itself, you could reasonably believe that if put in that position, that they would be ineffective just because of what happened in and of itself.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. I think that it's unfortunate what happened with Mrs.
Because what could have happened is by September, the whole thing could have blown over.
It could have, or it could have gone worse, and it could have, it developed into a bigger problem. And the superintendent was testified to before the hearing examiner. And this testimony's in the record that it was getting worse by the week. They were getting increasing numbers of phone calls. And then you're going to have press who's trying to talk to teachers, or, you know, parents maybe making, you know, if a student is disciplined, is a parent going to speak out and say, well, you know, or even worse, a role model. You know, cell phones are everywhere. And we've got students who are, you have got emerging sexual awareness, and they've got cell phones.
One quick question, because you're out of your first amount of time. Was this a text or was it an email? Because in the commissioner's, really, he refers to it as a text, that the picture was sent via text, and then he refers to it as an email.
In the facts, our understanding is that it was a text message, but it was stored on Mrs. Barzo's cell phone.
Correct, right.
Okay. Thank you.
May it please the court. David Campbell here for Edinburgh Consolidated School District, and it's a privilege to be before this court, especially for the first argument of the year, and in this case, to have the commissioner on my side instead of on the other side. this is a difficult case, this is an important case.
Question, because you did not allow yourself very much time, so right off the bat, in your brief, you say that the school district made this decision for two separate and independent reasons. One was the ineffectiveness, the other was her poor judgment, as you put it. But in reading the commissioner's decision, there's absolutely no reference to this second reason that you give. And also, in your letter to Mrs. Barza on August 25th, I don't see that mentioned at all. It seems that the principal reason given is her ability to do her duties. So how do we review that aspect of your argument?
And that is why I wanted to briefly address the court, because although the court is required to now analyze the decision of the commissioner, not necessarily the rationale, generally we agree with the rationale of the commissioner regarding the 2011 amendments, which have to mean something. However, the district made its decision based both on the ineffectiveness and, as you point out, on poor judgment in bringing the photograph to school. Now, in the original letter on August 25th, I believe that the focus was on ineffectiveness because that's what the school was aware of at the time. In the course of the hearing and once it was presented to the board, what came out is that Mrs. Barza had not only taken the photograph, but that she had it on her phone for over a year. And during that time had been taking the photograph to school every day. And so the school board saw that as analogous to a situation where, take it out of the electronic context. There's nothing wrong nothing wrong with having a nude photograph of yourself, but it is poor judgment for a principal or an educator to have that in a briefcase every day. And it doesn't matter if they lock the briefcase, but to bring that nude photograph to school, based on Mrs. Barza's testimony for over a year, was poor judgment. And so
counsel,
go ahead.
Is there any evidence that I've not seen it, but if there is, that the picture was harvested, for want of a better word, in the actual school? Or if it was harvested from the husband's phone or some other source. Is there any evidence how this picture actually got out from her phone to a third party?
There is not evidence about how it got out. I mean, there were multiple theories. I mean, the district chose not to investigate potential rumors about whether she sent it or how it got out. Based on the evidence, I think it's finding 22, although she sent it to her husband, and he could have been a potential source. I mean, what the hearing examiner mm-hmm. found was that it was somehow taken from her phone. We don't know who did it. All that we know is that she was walking around with this photograph to school, out of school, around the community every day, and that she didn't prevent it from getting
out. Okay, well, let me ask you this other question. Did Edinburgh ISD do any investigation? Because I think that if a student is passing it from one to another, or a parent is passing it from one parent to another parent, that is an illegal act. Did
Absolutely.
Edinburgh not see it fit to essentially end this kind of, some form of cyberbullying, I guess you could characterize it? I mean, don't you think that Edinburgh had that responsibility and protection of their employee?
Absolutely. And the district did. And if you look even in the record at Officer Perez's testimony, he testified that one of his concerns was not only the district, but Mrs. Sparza and trying to protect her from the embarrassment. So there was a multi-week, multi-month investigation into the photograph. As you look at the record before the court, what you'll find is eventually they ran into a dead end with a parent who refused to say where she had gotten the photograph. And so the statements from witnesses, the contents of that investigation are in the record. I believe it's exhibits 13 through 17 of Edinburgh's exhibits that are in the record before the court.
I have one more question.
Yes, Your Honor.
I believe we will adjust time as needed. If we disagree that the evidence supports the finding of ineffectiveness, but agree that she used poor judgment, as you put it, can we still reverse, even though the commissioner's focus was and central issue, as he put it, the effectiveness?
No. Well, I mean, I'm not going to tell the court that you couldn't reverse, but that wouldn't be the appropriate, way to handle the case.
So then the only thing that's really properly before us for our review is the evidence to support ineffectiveness.
Well, and specifically the commissioner's decision, not the rationale. So if you disagreed with the rationale on effectiveness, but found that the poor judgment supported the commissioner's decision to uphold the board's termination decision, then the court would affirm
the commissioner's. Even though the commissioner didn't discuss that or include that in his decision, but we think it does, then we could base it on that.
That's right. Now, there may be a situation where the court could reverse and remand to the commissioner. I know the commissioner raised that potential in their brief. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say that that wouldn't be appropriate depending on how the court addresses the issue and handles the problem. But what is before the court really is the commissioner's decision to uphold the district's good cause determination.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Squat.
May it please the court. This case has a lot of issues in it, but I don't believe it's a difficult case. I think this is a very straightforward case in terms of the application of what the law is. The whole issue here, and I think what you hear from the commissioner, what you hear from the school district, is that they're going to give you a whole bunch of different theories and things, and it was because of this, and what about the community, and what about the children, and it's outrageous, oh my God. I think that's not the path to look at. The path to look at is what the commissioner said. The basis of the commissioner's decision was on ineffectiveness. She was ineffective. That was what he said, period. That's it. This was, if the school district says, well, we don't like it because it makes the school district look bad. That's not what
the... That's the question I just asked, so you're disagreeing with how he answered it.
Well, yes, I am. I'm vehemently disagreeing with it, completely.
You're saying we're limited to what the commissioner bases decision on.
Your Honor, the way I look at it is this. If you give Mrs. Sparza a termination letter and you say, we're terminating you because you're ineffective, I would think there has to be some evidence, something to say that she's ineffective. You have nothing, absolutely nothing in this case to show that. We knew that the photograph was in circulation long before the school year ended. There's no incidents of disruption at all.
Who there knew that, no though? She didn't. What's the evidence of that? She didn't, herself didn't even know.
That's correct.
Right, until June?
She was advised by her daughter that this particular photo was in circulation on the internet. And Mrs. Sparza self-reports this.
But she that is in June.
That's correct.
That's June 25th, I believe.
June 14th.
June 14th.
Is when she went in to Edinburgh and mm-hmm. she spoke to the assistant superintendent and says, look, this is what's going on.
Those things aren't disputed, are they? That
no.
She self-reported and...
No, none of those...
But there's no evidence of what the hearing officer meant by long before, is there?
Well, yes, there's specific evidence in the record that from January 1 to May 23rd of 2016, you have nothing.
But evidence that the picture was already circulating
Right. What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that
February, March?
There's two things that I'm saying. The first one is from January 1 to May, there's no disruption, no ineffectiveness, nothing negative with respect to Mrs. Esparza's conduct. But she doesn't specifically say when the circulation of this photo began. Right. But she, the hearing examiner says long before. Now,
we don't know what long
before know what that is, Your Honor. I mean, maybe she was just inarticulate. But here's what I'm saying. This is not a moving target case. And I think that their job is to tell you or convince you, well, we've got, you know, what does the school district think? And is it bad for them? And then the community? No. They sent her a letter and they told her and they fired her because she was ineffective. That's what they told her. The commissioner says, right, we are terminating you because you are ineffective.
Mr. Escobar, can I ask you the same question? Does the school district or any school district, knowing some fact pattern, have to wait until a period of time to determine that the administrator, educator is ineffective, knowing that there's been an event that they may be ineffective, given that event here was the selfie on the phone, which in some cases I think you could argue they could be ineffective if, and like the other justices said, maybe if they just waited it out, it would have gone away. But is there some circumstance where the school district can say, hey, this incident is of such a character that we don't have to wait? We don't have to wait because it res ipsa loquitur, that in and of itself, it...
I think I agree with you, Your Honor. I think, yes, number one, yes. Can there be a circumstance when you can see something is so egregious that you have to terminate the employee immediately? Yes, absolutely. But that those are not the facts of this case. If a teacher sends a nude photograph to herself to a student, that's that situation that you're talking about.
No, but could you say and take it a bit farther and say that act... because they're going to have to say that act is going to make you ineffective. I mean, those are terms of art because you want to be able to articulate that when they want to appeal that decision.
With respect to your first question, what I'm saying is this. If you're going to fire a teacher and tell her that she's ineffective, you've got to have the evidence to support it. And they don't have any evidence in this case. And so in this particular case, we know that from the time... throughout the entire school year until the time that she was suspended, there was absolutely no incidents of disruption or that Mrs. Esparza was ineffective.
Well, but counsel, there things did happen in the summer. There was now the media became involved and it became a public event where before, yes, maybe it was in the internet, the picture was there, but there had not been this sort of community dissemination.
Well, Your Honor, look, I think what this is the way I think about it.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to give Edinburgh ISD advice, but if I could, I would say this. If you have your community and you're supposed to have that relationship that they're talking about, this was horrible because there's a naked picture of the principal in circulation. Well, look. That's all everybody knows. If you just hear that, oh my God, naked picture, principal, the school district, oh my God, it's terrible. Well, wait a minute. Tell the public she was a victim of a crime. And then you start thinking differently about it. If there's a peeping Tom in Edinburgh and he comes and he takes a picture of someone coming out of the shower naked and then he puts it on the internet and then that person gets fired, how are you going to blame that person? How is Mrs. Esparza any different from that? She's not. They're going to say, well, she took her phone to school. And, I mean, look, with all due respect to Mr. Campbell, there's no evidence that the photograph was somehow taken from her possession during the time.
That's a question.
And so that's just speculation, and we're not going to deal with that. We deal with what's on the record. And in this record, you know, if Edinburgh ISD had a problem with it, they could have done the alternative to, okay, well, we need to get away from this. No. Embrace your community and tell them she was a victim of a crime. We're going to stand behind her. And then if everybody knows that she was victimized by this, then the perception of the community changes. It's easy. She was a victim of a crime. Now you don't have that cloud over her saying, well, how do we know? No. That's what I would, I mean, just as a policy argument, that's what I'm saying. It's real simple. Just tell the community she was a victim of a crime.
Okay.
But let me
go to another question that kind of changes it. The trial court order gave us no reason for overturning the commissioner's decision. Okay. The education code tells us that the court may not reverse a decision of the commissioner unless the decision was not supported by substantial evidence or unless the commissioner's conclusions of law are erroneous. What is a standard that we have to look at when reviewing the trial court's decision? Let's talk about
the standard is the substantial evidence standard, which is whether reasonable minds could have reached the same conclusion as the commissioner. And no reasonable mind could reach that decision. I can tell you why, because the commissioner said it himself. The commissioner said the following, petitioner in his decision, who's Mrs. Esparza, petitioner, is of course correct that if one reads the findings of fact and the recommendation, one would conclude that there is not good cause to terminate her contract. That is a reasonable mind that is speaking. And I'm getting a little worried about my time, but I want to get into what I think puts logic on its head. And I have a real fundamental problem with what the commissioner is doing with these amendments and these terms of art that he's using that makes this whole decision confusing. And that's probably the best word, the nicest word I can use to say it's confusing, because, I mean, this is what he says. And it shocks me that anybody would say this. He says, the hard facts about this situation are not in dispute. The hard facts are the facts about what actually happened, as opposed to the interpretive facts that explain the meaning of the hard fact. The dispute is over the interpretation given to the hard facts on an issue that is closely tied to the issue of good cause. Well, I went to law school and I took the bar exam, and I've been practicing for about 20 years now. And I can tell this court with a straight face, I've never heard of interpretive fact. I've never heard of a hard fact. I've heard of facts. And that's what he has to deal with. And I think he's using these terms of art to reach a conclusion that he cannot reach through logic, through citations to the record, to anything. He doesn't have anything. He just thinks it's wrong, and so he wants to change it. But you cannot do that, because that is not what the law allows. He has to have some evidence about this ineffectiveness.
Right. And wait, on page 14 of his decision, he also says, looking at the record, in this case, different conclusions could be reached. While either determination could be reached, response decision to terminate is a reasonable decision that is supported by the record. So it seems to me that what we're left with is just based on the record, the evidence that was provided, if it's substantial to support this decision.
And if I could just reiterate what Justice Hinojosa said, given the fact that we have a two-sentence order, it's almost as if we're stepping into the shoes of the trial court, and the issues weren't narrowed at all from what he was to determine based on the standard when seeking judicial review the first time. Now that has been appealed to us, and we have no guide whatsoever as to the decision of the trial court or of the district court. And so, I mean, I don't understand how we can use our standard of review based on an order that gives us no idea of how he based his decision, whether it was 21-307F or even G. I'm not sure if G was brought up by any one of you, whether it was some sort of error that may have caused him to confuse his conclusions of law, but we don't know.
Well, I think I can resolve that issue in your mind, Your Honor, if you will allow me. I think that issue is simple, extremely simple. The school district adopted the facts that the hearing examiner made. The commissioner adopted the facts that the hearing examiner made. If you want findings of fact that they can't disagree with because they adopted the hearing examiner's fact, the commissioner adopted the hearing examiner's finding of fact, now you have facts. Specific detailed facts that they agree with, that the hearing examiner gave and the commissioner agreed with. So you have all the facts that are necessary to render an opinion in accordance with what the law requires. And if you look at the facts, and if you look at the standard, whether reasonable minds could have reached the same conclusion as the commissioner. No reasonable mind could have reached that conclusion, because the commissioner himself says, if you read the findings of fact, they had no good cause to do it.
So then you're saying that his decision was capricious.
It's capricious, it's arbitrary, it's erroneous, because he's saying, I mean, it's either a moving target or not. He's saying she's ineffective. Where's the evidence of ineffectiveness? Because there's some false equivalence that they're trying to make you buy, which is, well, there's a lot of disruption and we don't like it and it looks bad. That's not why they fired her. They fired her because she was ineffective. There's zero evidence of that.
Okay. So, counsel, then I guess what you're saying is they should have let her take the position, and then if parents were pulling children out of school, if there was insubordination, if there was incidents of children, insulting her, I mean, that kind of disruption where her leadership was somehow question, then at that point, then there would have been a basis for her to be ineffective. But since there was really just speculation that she was going to be ineffective, or in likelihood ineffective, that's where they failed to reach their burden.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, that's exactly right. But I need to raise this to Your Honor. I need to talk about this because I think it's critically important as it concerns the facts of this case. There's three witnesses that opposing counsel relies on: Ms. Morin, the school board president, Mr. Salinas, and the superintendent, Mr. Gutierrez. And all of them all of them testified about their feelings, their opinions, and what they thought. And so, I think the commissioner looked at that evidence and he got a little bit concerned. And I can tell you why he got concerned, because if you look in his opinion, I think it's the supplemental record, page 34, he says that expert testimony concerning future effectiveness was not conclusory or speculation or conjecture. That's what he says. And that's the quandary here, okay? Because he's getting people to guess about what the future holds.
He also says that the petitioner did not object to the testimony regarding future effectiveness. How do we deal with that?
Well, Your Honor, two things. First one is 21256 says that the hearing examiner conducts her administrative trial as would a district court. When you're reviewing a district court's decision, legal and factual sufficiency of the evidence can be raised for the first time on appeal. That's under 33.1. So my argument is that there's zero evidence, and therefore it's a legal sufficiency of the evidence argument. And so what I'm saying is this. If, because there's two things that cause, I read it a little bit differently than most. I've been looking at nothing else but this. But what I'm telling you is that if you're going to have somebody testify in court or anywhere, they have to have personal knowledge of what they're going to testify to. Otherwise, they can't testify. Under Rule 602, you have to have personal knowledge. Okay, how can any of these people have personal knowledge about what the future holds? They don't. So then what the commissioner does in his mind, okay, well, I got to make this testimony expert testimony. And we're going to make these people experts so that they can testify about future and effectiveness. But there's a huge problem with that. The hearing examiner didn't recognize any of that testimony as expert testimony. In order to provide expert testimony, you have to be a qualified witness. You have to have peer-reviewed studies. You have to have some methodology, some scientific basis to give your opinion. They've got nothing. And aside and apart from that, when you look at what their opinion is, they say, well, that's what I think.
What about the testimony that they had lost, members of the community had lost respect for her, given the position that she was in as principal? And I think that was based on people actually saying that to one of the, I think it was the school board member.
Well, Your Honor, again, I mean, the way I deal with all those issues is this. They didn't fire her for that reason. They didn't fire her because they had bad feelings or it was, no. They fired her because she was ineffective. It can't be a moving target. That's what they told her. That's what the commissioner's decision says.
Doesn't that go hand in hand? If people don't have respect for her, then she's not going to be effective.
Well, again, two responses, Your Honor. The first one is the school district could have done something by telling her that the only reason she's in that position is because she was a victim of a crime. They didn't want to do that. Okay, that's the easiest fix. So now you don't have ridicule, you have sympathy or empathy. And that takes care of that. Now, granted, I mean, are people going to have questions? Yes. But did they choose to embrace the issue or like, we want nothing to do with that, let's get away? No. She was a teacher there for years. She was even being considered for a promotion during the time that this investigation was ongoing. The school board principal, I'm sorry, the school board president says, we think she deserves a second chance. But she didn't get a second chance.
Well, and how about this reassignment? Because I
was going to ask that.
Yes. There was a period of time where I believe between July and August, or June and August, until August 25th, when she was notified that her contract was terminated, whereby she was under the impression that she was just not, it was maybe not going to be a principal, maybe, I don't know, reassigned. I don't know what that means. Maybe administrative type duties where you're not actually interfacing with students. I don't know.
Right. They did reassign her, and forgive me, Your Honor, I don't remember precisely what specific position they put her in, but they reassigned her administratively, but she never went back to work. She never went back there. And no one's ever found it. I mean, we're never going to know, okay? We're never going to know whether she was ineffective or not, because we're not going to know. We just have a bunch of guesswork. And when you say that I'm going to fire you because you're ineffective, that's different than I'm going to fire you because I think you will be ineffective in the future.
Mr. Escobar, isn't really the bottom line whether or not there is some substantial evidence to support that finding that the school board believed that she would be ineffective? Is that the bottom line?
No.
There's either evidence or there's not. And if there is evidence, then that supports the commissioner's finding, and then we can't adopt the district court's, because we don't know what the district court did. We don't know whether he thought that there was substantial evidence or not. I'm guessing he may have because of how he ordered, the order that he signed, but if we find that there's at least some substantial evidence regarding ineffectiveness, then we have to affirm the finding of the commissioner's court or the commissioner's ruling.
I don't disagree with you, Your Honor. My position is that there's zero evidence. There's absolutely no evidence of ineffectiveness. Absolutely. That's the whole basis of my decision is based with the assumption in my brief. There's no evidence of ineffectiveness, and you know, because it has to be tied to what the reason. In other words, you can't tell me in the commissioner's decision, I fired you because you're ineffective. But it was really bad for the community. It was really hard. No. This is the reason that you have to stick to. And so they want you to buy these other reasons. That's not the reason. The reason is that she was ineffective. That's what he says. That's the only thing we can rely on. That's the only thing I'm supposed to attack on appeal. And so what I'm telling you, Your Honor, respectfully, is that there is no evidence that she was ineffective because she never went back to work. And if she never, and we know that from the time that the school year started to the time that she was suspended with pay on June 23rd, 2016, she was not ineffective and there wasn't any disruption. What do? You're just guessing otherwise. And you can't guess if you're going to terminate her employment. And for that, Your Honor, I would request that this court affirm the trial court's judgment.
Thank you.
Justice Tiarina, you're right when you say that's the bottom line and that's the standard of review. And because substantial evidence review is something that is typically an administrative, I mean, the court's probably more familiar with the more than a scintilla standard. And that is a legal sufficiency standard that I thought we would spend more time talking about today given the argument, the briefing about the 2011 amendments. But it appears that it's clear that that's the issue. And my friend on the other side has argued that there's no evidence on this record of ineffectiveness. And I think that's a dangerous argument, not only for ECISD, but for any district. Because a district shouldn't be put in the position of having to wait until kids are pulled out of school or until you start having protests on campus. A school district should be able to make a reasonable decision. And in this case, I mean, my friend on the other side may not.
But is it a reasonable decision if it's based on speculation, if that's what we have here?
Well, we don't have that. I mean, there is definitely, it's an opinion. I mean, it's a mixed question of law and fact, or a mixed question, it's opinion testimony. Whether it's expert or lay opinion, I think is maybe irrelevant. But I will say, if there was anyone who would know whether or not the community outreach would affect her effectiveness, I can't think of any expert you could pay who would be willing to offer an opinion that would be more reasoned or reasonable than the longtime superintendent of that district, the board president of that district, the vice principal at that school. And not only do we have that evidence in the record testimony that was not objected to, and certainly there was fodder for cross-examination on those issues, but unobjected testimony about that, I mean, we have Ms. Esparza's own testimony on page 457 of the supplemental record. You can read her testimony where she says the reason she went in and talked to people, she realized it was going to be a problem not only for herself but for the district. And the commissioner found that it's reasonable that in a middle school, when students have a nude picture of particularly a principal, it could apply to a teacher or someone else, but particularly the leader of that school, that is going to cause the kind of community outrage that you had in this case. Now,
but even the commissioner himself on page 13 says the reasons for the conclusion that petitioner cannot be an effective principal are laid out. And while the testimony concerns future actions, it is not mere speculation that a middle school's principal's effectiveness could be diminished by the circulation of his photograph. That, to me, sounds speculative. It could be.
Well, it could be depending on the facts of the case. And in this case, the district did not rush to judgment. I mean, this was reported on June 22nd. The investigation was kicked off on the 23rd, and she was suspended with pay during that investigation. The school district, I mean, my friend on the other side claims the school district should have engaged the media and talked to the community. We're a school district. We're not a press relations agency. We're here to educate children, not to engage in that kind of conduct. What the district did everything they could to protect her identity and hope that they could wait it out and that the story would die down. If you look, in fact, at I don't have the page number in front of me, but Plaintiff's Exhibit 6 in the record is a news article where if you look at the record, on the very next page, you will see what the district's position was. The district would not confirm who the individual was. I mean, we weren't giving any information to the press. While the district didn't even identify Ms. Esparza in the hopes that this would die down, in the record there's a press release from her attorney telling everyone the identity of the individual. So even with that, the district was hopeful that it would die down, but at some point the district had to make a decision. The district waited for months. The district tried in good faith, hoping that it would die down. I mean, on this record, I think you can see she was an excellent principal, and principals are the backbone of a school district. And it was the district's sincere hope that this would die down, that they would be able to start the school year with the same principal who had been there. But unfortunately, that's not what happened.
But counsel, by the summer, the school district had made a decision to reassign her. So she was no longer going to come back to the school district in the capacity of the face of the school. She was going to be reassigned. Now, I don't know if the record's clear what her reassignment was. But wouldn't that have been the most logical decision? I mean, it's middle school, kids pass through in 3 years. So, you know, wouldn't that have been the most prudent path for the school district to take in protection of their employee who had been a victim of crime and in protection of the children and the parents who would have to, be under her during that period of time with the knowledge of this picture being in circulation?
That is a decision that I think that the school district was confronted with. I mean, she was reassigned because under school law, I mean, in order for her to be suspended with pay, we had to make a decision about whether she would be principal or give her notice that she may be in a different position.
What position was she reassigned to?
She was just reassigned pending the investigation, Your Honor. And so really it was a stopgap to find out if there was some other fix, I guess, for the problem. Now, I mean, hindsight is 20/20, and you can always Monday morning quarterback, but I think that's why the 2011 amendments are so important, because they put in school districts the responsibility and discretion to look at the facts of the case and make that decision. And deference is supposed to be given in that decision. Of course, it can't be it's not untethered to the record and the evidence. There must be some evidence in the record to support that decision. But in a case like this, where I think there were multiple decisions that you could come to and reasonable minds could disagree, that the court has to defer to what the school district decided in the moment. There were only two other things that I briefly wanted to address. My friend on the other side vehemently disagreed with me about the court's review of the commissioner's decision. If you look at page 9 of the commissioner's brief, the commissioner cited two cases, and I know we put it in our brief too, stating that courts must uphold the commissioner's decision on any legal basis shown in the record, even if he gave an erroneous legal basis for his decision. So the court can affirm, can reverse the district court and affirm the commissioner's decision, affirming the school board's decision, either based on the legal reasoning the commissioner gave or based on another legal basis supported by the record.
Let me just ask you one question. Now that, you know, I guess this is a case of first impression and there's really nothing to guide us, but after 2011, what is now the role of this hearing examiner? If essentially the school board can disregard it, why didn't if that was a legislative intent, then why not just do away with that hearing examiner's position and say, you know what, school boards, you're untethered, you know, at this point. Maybe that's coloring my word. Let me just say unrestricted or permitted to now, you know, have complete say-so on personnel issues.
No, I think that's a great question. As you look at the revised statute, 21.259B, as it currently stands, I can only see two possible readings of that statute. Based on just the plain language, without looking at anything else, I think the conclusion you would come to based on the language would be that one, that a school district is untethered to any finding by the hearing examiner, and it would beg the question, why do we have a hearing examiner
exactly.
at all? And that is why I think, even though the plain language may not give us everything, that's why we need to look at the legislative history and the overall scheme, which is what the commissioner did, in saying, for example, if there's an underlying who, what, when, where fact, did a teacher punch a student or did the student punch a teacher, mm-hmm. then that underlying hard fact is something that is determined by the hearing examiner. And so I do think hearing examiners have a role, and I don't think this is completely new in Texas law. I mean, this court has addressed the difficulty in determining whether something's a finding of fact, conclusion of law, or mixed question before. And essentially what the 2011 amendments did, according to the commissioner, is shift mixed conclusions from the hearing examiner's purview to defer to the hearing examiner and moved that to the board, leaving for the hearing examiner pure findings of fact.
Okay.
So I think that the commissioner's decision addresses your question, Your Honor, and does leave a role for the hearing examiner in this process.
And the role of the court would then just be to see if the board abused it. It seems to me if everything is resting now and the board has untethered power, then why even have appellate procedures? Why even have the ability to take this matter to court? Just have amend the statute where everything that involves personnel issues is ultimately decided by school boards.
Well, certainly that's one thing the legislature could have done. I will say this, though, that under the commissioner's current interpretation of the statute, there is redress for an employee or an individual that would allow them to challenge whether there's legal sufficiency review. This court deals with legal sufficiency review all the time. It's not often successful, but every once in a while you get lucky.
Thank you. Very interesting case. Well done.
Appreciate
the case will be under submission.
Thank you, Your Honor.